Company of One, episode number 24. This is Dale Callahan, your host for Company of One. And I'm coming on to episode 24 after coming out of a weekend of our new graduate program for the incoming clients for this year as they've come into our graduate program to begin the seminar. Seminar is a three-day activity, pretty intense level of activity followed by the first weekend of classes and the first weekend where we really get down to serious business. Very busy, very intense time. It's kind of an information overload for all parties, faculty, clients, staff, anybody that's involved, just because there's just so much activity. There's never any downtime. So, yeah, I'm mentally exhausted. But, you know, it's a blast. It's always great to work with new people, to share ideas with people, and to see clients reacting to things that you develop and you deliver. I mean, isn't that the most fun thing, to see somebody actually use, enjoy, grow from what you've done? I mean, that's what a lot of you are doing. A lot of you are creating on the job every day. You're creating stuff. You're educating. You're even, to a sense, entertaining people and helping them grow into something new. And that's what we hope in terms of the activity that we do here. We hope to help you really grow your personal brand, find that freedom to lead, that freedom to step out of the box and just do something. So in today's episode, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be following up on the last two episodes of this podcast, in which case we dealt with your personal brand. Now, in the first episode, which was episode number 22, and by the way, these are all linked in the show notes going to be at dalecallahan.com/24. And that's going to be where you find this. But if you go to dalecallahan.com/22, you're going to find the episode on personal branding from first impressions. How do you make a first impression? What creates a first impression? And how can you get control of that? We've always heard that first impressions are critical, right? The second thing was actions. In episode number 23, we dealt with personal branding from actions. And today we're going to talk about how to show them that you're a leader. And before we get into the 7 points here about showing leadership, let me just make an appeal. Is you cannot, well, our world, we're just absolutely empty of leaders. I mean, void. There's this huge leadership void. As I look at departments within companies, divisions within companies, teams of one or two people, corporations as a whole, government entities, nonprofit organizations, I see no leadership. Well, I mean, I see some leadership, and some of it's great. And some people tell me, you know, that leadership always works. Somebody's always leading. I don't agree with that. Some people are just floundering. You see it. You see many, many examples of these kind of things going on. It is so easy to lead. Let me make that statement again. It is so easy to lead because no one is stepping up. No one is casting a vision. No one is taking responsibility. I mean, it's just a massive, giant void. And while there is a loneliness to leadership in the sense that as a leader, people seek you out, but they always seek you out in terms of what you can do for them. But there's obviously many other leaders in the world that you can connect with. And they'll find you. When you start taking lead, they'll find you. And you're going to be amazed that people follow. And as we kind of hit back on some of the points from the last couple of things, all the things from branding fall in here. Your first impression, your actions, acting with passion, acting with character, those kind of things are absolutely critical. But I'm going to kind of talk through seven specifics here of leadership. So let's just get right into this self, and we're into this, and we'll be calling this, you know, maybe branding yourself as a leader. So the first point on this is communicate with power. Now, I am not saying you have to be an eloquent speaker. You have to be comfortable in front of a crowd. You have to be comfortable writing a podcast or doing a podcast or writing email. That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm saying here is that you have got to be able to communicate without whining. If the issue of whining or complaining, you know, it has come up a couple of times in the first impression and your actions and things like that. But, you know, as a leader, and by the way, let's define and be clear what a leader is. I don't mean positional leader, manager, CEO, anything like that. I mean a person who's going to take the lead. If you just don't whine, if you communicate with power, a leader has a higher expectation. The whiner, we don't really expect much from the whiner. I mean, we might even join in with the whiner, right? If you look at people in your office that, and the whiner is not, you know, always the obvious whiner. The whiner might be just the person who seems astute and seems very knowledgeable about the systems and that they're dealing with. No, that's not, so they may even sound, so they sound like they know what they're talking about. But you kind of walk away with them and you always kind of feel hopeless. They're whining. They just whine with great authority. Are they leading? Yeah, you might call them leading. I don't think so. Because they're going nowhere. And leading implies you're going somewhere. They speak with great authority to stay in the same spot. Excuse my alarms going off on phones. So when a whiner leads and when there's this kind of leading, everybody gets down and feels hopeless. Because again, you're not leading, you're not really going anywhere, and it leaves you. And you've been to these meetings where you go to meetings and it's either your boss, a supervisor, it's a coworker, somebody else on the team, and they with great authority explain why it's hopeless. Now, that's not the words they use, but they give you all the reasons you can't do anything, all the reasons it's going downhill. You walk away and you feel hopeless. As a leader, think about this. Talk about solutions. Really, and speak with power. Communicate with power about solutions. If you just sit there and say the one thing, you know, this is all fine. This is the facts and this is the truth. But what are we going to do about it? What kind of actions can we take to improve our situation? And we're going to hit more on that later. But, I mean, you got to communicate that message with power, even if you do not know the answer. By asking such a question, you've communicated with power. So that's absolutely critical, is that powerful communication. And again, it's not eloquent, it's powerful words, it's action words. Okay, much like we talked about branding through your actions. So the number two, and by the way, all of these things you're going to find are very, very related, but as I've watched people lead and I watch teams, like in particular in our IAM activity, you see this leadership take place on teams where they're all co-workers, co-team members, and people take these action steps. So first, you communicate with power. Second, you expect the best. Now, it obviously goes hand in hand, but no matter what situation, you should expect the best outcome. Earl Nightingale was famous for saying, "You become what you think about." So if you think that you're going to lose, if you think that you're going to, the division's going to get laid off. If you think that you're going to do mediocre work and everybody's going to be mad at you, you know, if you're thinking along those lines, it's that self-fulfilling prophecy, because you tend to meet your own expectations. But if you expect the best, even when you don't have control of it, you need to expect the best. Jim Collins calls this confront the brutal facts yet never lose faith in his book, Good to Great. And I think that's just that is amazing, because we all know the leaders who are Pollyanna. You know, they don't tell the truth. They're not dealing with the facts. They're pretending that facts are not there. And that's not what we're saying. That's not leading. That's putting your head in the sand. And obviously we see a lot of that going on. But looking at the brutal facts, but not losing faith, expecting the best. Most people deal with the brutal facts. They either don't deal with the brutal facts, they pretend they're not there, or they deal with the brutal facts and they make them worse by expecting gloom and doom. The leader looks and he shares light and he shares hope. You know, look, this is the situation that we're in, and yes, it looks bad and it looks bleak. But we can get ourselves out of this. We can win. I've seen this play out so many times just by expecting the best. You know, when your budgets get cut. And I remember a single conversation within a group I was in at the university. And the budgets were getting cut. You know, last couple of years, starting at 2008, I guess, or probably before, the budgets were getting cut every year. And you go to the meeting, and the budgets are getting cut 10%, 15%. You know, the percentage is irrelevant. And you just have basic whining and gloom and doom, and we're going to have to do this. And I remember somebody speaking up and just saying, you know, okay, look, let's just face the facts. The budget's going to get cut every single year. Now, I mean, if you think, that actually made things worse, except it was a brutal fact. They were actually stepping back and saying, you know, we're sitting here whining about what's going on this year, but let's face the true facts. It's going to happen every single year. It's going to get cut. We're probably, you know, at least in the next, you know, as far as we can see out, the economy from a legislative point of view is not going to change. So we're going to keep getting budget cuts, guys. What can we do about it? Let's not just talk about this year and solve this year's problem. Let's figure out how to rise above this for good. I mean, it was really weird in just that one statement, the dynamic of the room changed. And it wasn't that everybody looked at this person and said, "Wow, you're an idiot," or "Wow, you just made it worse." It was like, "Well, yeah, you got a great point. Yeah, we've got to deal with this, and we kind of got to grow beyond it." And it was at expecting the best, and let's kind of deal with it. Let's deal with the brutal fact. Let's not pretend it's not there, but let's grow beyond it. And this is obviously related to number three, the dealing with the what ifs. Do not worry about the what ifs. You know what? These are the scenarios that we tend to make things worse. What if our competition wins? What if our division gets closed? What if I get fired? You know, where we start projecting gloom and doom. And sometimes we see these what-ifs in these bad situations where there's already bad news being delivered. But sometimes we see these what-ifs and there's really no inkling that anything's going on. There's nothing bad going on. Some people just like to worry. Including some leaders, that they constantly are saying, you know, well, what if, you know, we just figure next year we're going to get our budget cut. You know, we just figure next year things are going to get worse. I mean, we know that person who's like, well, that's what I expect. Of course, that's what happens to me. And when we hear this language, you know, and sometimes it's said in a silly way, you know, where something happens and people will just make a comment, well, that's what I would expect. You know, that's just my life. That's how things go for me. Even we'll say that silly, which is kind of that, it's very negative. But then you carry on from that, from silliness to dealing with the what ifs. And I've been in many meetings, as probably have you, where the what ifs begin to control the meeting. And it will be what if these things happen? What if our competition does this? What if our division gets close? Now, they're fair questions, right, to ask these questions, and it's kind of that confronting the brutal facts. But you have to turn them around and get them focused instead on what can we do. In other words, you don't worry about the what ifs. You start to take action on the what ifs. So when you communicate with power here, we expect the best. We don't worry about the what ifs. Okay, so all of these are positive, you know, looking at things in the most positive way. Number four, and this one might surprise you, is to listen to gossip. Now, I didn't say ignore gossip, and I didn't say gossip, but listen to gossip. I've always been in the mode of trying to ignore gossip because, you know, you always hear, you know, let's just to walk away from gossip. But, you know, I've kind of come to realize, and some people don't agree with me on this, but gossip is fear. Usually it's fear. Sometimes it's be talking about other people. And you have to decide that as a leader, which, again, being a leader, a coworker, people working for you, you listen to gossip. You listen to the things they worry about. You listen to the words they spread that somebody said. And you hear what they're saying. Now you don't participate, you don't spread it, but you do listen, because gossip is usually fear of some sort. Maybe it's jealousy of some sort. Maybe they're saying, "Hey, did you hear Sally got fired, or Sally's going to get fired, or something?" So it's a situation that's bad for somebody else. When you hear your team and coworkers spreading gossip, they're expressing things. They're on their mind, and they're usually an emotional connection. When Sally's getting fired, we're a little worried about what if that happens to us. We're a little worried about, I'm sure I'm glad Sally finally got fired because she's incompetent. And I think it's important for the leader to deal with the emotional aspects of gossip. Not to participate in it, not to spread it, and not to encourage it, but to hear it out. Unlike a what ifs, gossip is an expression of what if it is about to happen. It's about it. It's the fear. You know, it's real. You've got to deal with it. Sometimes you've got to act like a reporter. You know what a reporter does when supposedly true reporter does when they get information, they try to validate it. How many times have I seen situations where, you know, there's a lot of talk, there'll be in meetings, and there will be 15, 20, 30 minutes, maybe even hours, days, months spent on assumptions via gossip. And somebody will have the sense about them to pick up the phone and call, you know, for instance, "Hey, we're having a procurement issue." And we've seen this a couple of times. I have, you know, where you cannot do this. You cannot take this action. You cannot buy this equipment anymore. And somebody will pick up, and much discussion goes about what ifs come in. Worry comes in because this equipment isn't critical to us performing our job, but the company's no longer letting us buy this equipment. And somebody will step up and say, "Well, let's just call the procurement office and find out, number one, is this true?" I mean, I had a situation like this where we were being told we could not get rooms for our class, which I think I've mentioned before, and we for our courses because they are partly online. And there was all this statement from middle management and everybody saying, "You can't do that. We just can't do it. It's, you know, it's impossible." And I called the vice president's office and said, "You know, is this a policy or is this just a misunderstanding?" And it was a misunderstanding. That's it. You know, and it was cleared up instantaneously that, no, that's not the truth. Because, you know, so often in middle management, things just take a life of their own and policy gets created. So when you hear gossip, though, you need to eat gossip. You need to deal with it head on. If I have a team member that's talking negatively about another team member, you want to kill it. You want to kill it, and you want to deal with, that's an ethical issue. That's a brand issue. That's a leadership responsibility to deal with these people who are damaging the corporation, damaging the division by talking about other people in a negative way behind their back. That kind of gossip you want to get rid of. Fear gossip you want to deal with and find out if it's true or false. Because it's really weird. Once you deal with it and once they know whether it's true or false, the gossip tends to go away and people get back to work. So you do want to listen. You just don't want to participate. So I think a leader has to listen to gossip because, again, that's the message. That's what's concern. That's that concern that's on your team's heart. Next, on the fifth point, you want to be happy. I mean, that's just about as simple as it is. Emotions are contagious. If you worry, they will worry. If you see hope and live out as an optimist, it'll rub out. It'll rub off on others. You think the best, express positive thinking, and you will instantaneously raise the morale of your team. I know this. I saw the most powerful example of this when I worked for Bell South. I was part of it, and I noticed how negative I had become working with a team of very poor morale. And I just literally, and I think I had read something by Earl Nightingale, you become what you think about. And I just kind of said, I refuse to play this anymore. And I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of being so negative and feeling like you need a bath every time you walk into the office. So I just decided to be happy. I mean, just literally, you know, I would look for the best. I started doing some of the listen to gossip, confronting it. But generally, I was happy. And it was so, and I didn't mean for this to happen, but it was so amazing within hours, the impact that began to have on the office. And I just remember standing back and thinking, why everybody's happier today? And I didn't even make the connection. I thought, you know, this, everybody seems a little more uplifted today. And I thought, what is it? Is it sunshiny or, you know, whatever? And then I remembered when I walked in the door that morning, they had not been. They were pretty negative. They were whiny, and some events had happened as I walked in the door, you know, that they were whiny. But I noticed as we kind of continued this on for a couple of weeks, it totally changed the dynamics. It changed the dynamics of how they dealt with the teams they were dealing with on the phone, how they dealt with customers on the phone. You know, it was just because one person, and it wasn't that I was magical or did any one thing, but I was a leader, and one person made the difference. In the book, Today We Are Rich, he talks about Yahoo, and I think as a vice president of Yahoo, and that their team, you know, the leader was very negative. And, you know, kind of worried all the time. And just the whole team on this group of people was really struggling. And when the leader realized what he was doing and changed his attitude and just, you know, some of the things we've talked about so far, chose to be happy, everything changed. Everything changed on the team. Better results, better attitude, and it all comes from a choice. You know, just be happy. Number six, you want to seek solutions. And this goes back to so much of the other things, but just actively seeking out solutions. Once you know those brutal facts, look for solutions, workarounds, options. Don't just give up. Dale Carnegie, in his famous book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, he gives you a formula, and I think this formula I've used many times. You know, it's really a great formula. When you're dealing with something you're worried about, you step back and you take pen and paper and you just think, what's the worst possible outcome. I mean, you write it down. The worst possible thing to happen. I'm going to get fired, for instance. We're going to get our budget cut. We're going to lose this customer. You just think, in that particular situation you are worried about, what is the worst possible outcome you can conceive? And then accept it. And I remember reading this in his book. You're like, accept it? You know, I'm going to lose my job. Accept it? Yeah. Just emotionally accept it. Yeah. I'm going to lose my job. Okay. You almost say this out loud and say, I'm probably going to lose my job on this. And I just got to deal with it. And I've tried this a few times, and I remember reading it and thinking, well, that doesn't really make sense. But he tells you that just accepting it, you change, you quit worrying about it. You're like, I'm there. I mean, how many times have you worried about stuff? And when it became true, what you worried about, or you dreaded an activity, but once you got into it, it really wasn't as bad. The dread of it was worse than the reality of it. And that's true very often. And when you emotionally accept something's going to happen, then you've kind of dealt with it. Okay. So you figure the worst that's going to happen, you emotionally accept it. And then you think, okay, now this is where I am. I'm going to get fired. How can I improve upon this situation? Because I'm already at the low point, right? You're figuring, I'm already here at the low point. Any improvement is better. So instead of worrying about, hey, I might get demoted, I might get my pay cut, I might be yelled at by the boss, I might get reprimands, you know, here's all the things. And that's what we do. We worry about multiple things. But what you just do is you just go straight to the bottom and you say, okay, I'm going to be fired. Therefore, reprimand is an improvement over being fired. It doesn't feel good, but it's an improvement. A demotion is even an improvement over being fired. I mean, in probably a temporary situation. But you accept that it's going to happen, and then you try to improve upon it. You know, so if you think a situation is, we had something not too long ago where we thought we were losing a client. You know, significant amount of money. We thought we were losing this client because some events happened. You know, and I remember sitting there thinking, well, this one's, you know, the worst that can happen. This person, we lose them, we lose the revenue, those kind of things happen. Okay, so we've lost them. I kind of dealt with it. Okay, they're gone. And I'm doing the calculations in my head. What does that mean to the budget? Well, that hurts. But they're gone. We got to deal with it. And then I set out and thought, okay, how can I possibly improve upon this situation because some things had happened. So I got on the phone with this customer and just had a chat. And at this point, I'd already accepted it. I wasn't even trying to win them back. I called them, apologized for what had happened, and listened. You know, there was really more of that me listening because I kind of felt like the best thing I could do is reach out with them and give them a sincere apology because there was really, given what had happened, I couldn't improve upon the situation. But it was so odd that just by taking that little action, instead of worrying about it, writing it off, doing a lot of things that the team was thinking about doing, writing letters, calling attorneys, and doing some of those kind of things, you know, that trying to save the situation, which actually made it worse, I accepted it would happen and just tried a little thing to improve it. And it actually did. It worked. You know, we kept that customer and client. And they were actually very thrilled with us and brought us more customers, clients. Because the way we dealt with the situation, that we were just upfront, brutal, apologetic, and yet we weren't bending an eye. We weren't compromising on the principles that caused us to fall into this situation. We, Because we had made a call, a business call, and we thought that business call was going to lose the customer. You know, we didn't apologize for I apologized for the effect, but the way it got handled, but I didn't apologize for the policy. And if that makes sense, I mean, I can't go into much detail here, but you know, I didn't apologize for, we had to hold the ground, but we did it in a poor way, right? So. Once they got to vent and yell and scream, which actually they didn't yell and scream, but once they got to vent and hear this stuff and be heard, it improved. You know, so many times, if we just seek a solution, if we just step back, and again, this goes back to the what ifs, the gossip, you know, just sitting back and saying, okay, what can we do about it? Let's look for a solution. Let's look for an improvement. What can we do about it? So number seven is a leader does not seek permission. Now, I'll say that carefully because, obviously if you go off and spend the corporate budget outside of your domain of authority, then there, you've probably crossed a thin line. But I mean, in reasonable situations, what we deal with is corporations and divisions and individuals who will not make a single bold move, who will not do anything without first asking for all the permissions of the higher-ups, which, by the way, never comes. Because part of the middle management structure of most organizations is to set guidelines and set barriers and boundaries, and nobody's to go outside of them. And it takes a very unique leader when they hear something to say, yeah, go, Dale, go do that. Yes, Sally, that's a great idea. Go do it and make it happen. It's very unusual. Instead, act. You know, you've got a customer that is upset and needs a refund, act on it. You got a customer who you need to go deal, get in the car and go deal with a situation. And I used to do this in Bell South all the time, you know, that if I would have gone and knocked on my boss's door and said, look, we've got a customer out here that's really angry at us. I'm going to go visit them. You know, I'm not the marketing rep. I'm not the outside sales rep. I'm not all these people. But I can help. Now, if I would have gone and sought permission to do those kind of things, you know, I would have been told no. And I would have been told no, not angrily or anything. I would have been told, you know, that's the marketing people's job. You know, let them deal with it. You know, it's not your job, you know, that we hear so often. But no, I just pretty much would go get in the car and go see them and talk to them and listen to them, you know. And I would tell them, look, I'm not your marketing rep. I'm just kind of here to your problem and trying, you know, from the technical side of things, can we help the situation? And sometimes we would get on the phone with the marketing rep and tell them, and sometimes they would meet me out there. And sometimes it just wasn't necessary. And, is there some danger to that? Yeah, maybe. Only one time did that upset anybody, and that was a legal lawsuit situation, which, quite frankly, I think I still took the right action because I was focusing on customer. But, you know, the leaders, you don't really seek permission. You need to do something. You act. Now, you do it within the boundaries of the law and the regulations and spending money, but you act. Because you're never going to get permission to improve upon a situation unless you have a very unique leader. You just have to act. So those are some things that I see. If you want to brand yourself as a leader, and you will be recognized as a leader by doing these things, and they're so simple and they're so subtle, you know, communicating with power, expecting the best, not worrying about the what-ifs, listen to the gossip. Listen, but don't participate in the gossip. Being happy, being just generally joyful, seeking solutions, and then acting without seeking permission. Those are the things that you find are leaders. One of the books I really love, and one of the authors I really love, is Seth Godin. And in his book, Tribes, if you kind of want a wake-up call on this and kind of make you feel like, hey, I'm the corporate stooge. I'm sitting here. I'm not acting. I'm a sellout. Go read the book, Tribes, by Seth Godin. Excellent book on leadership. Excellent book. That's not really what he's talking about per se, is leadership, but that's exactly what he's talking about, is leadership. And he just talks about people never anoint you as a leader. Okay, they never anoint you. They never come to you. They may give you a title and say, Dale, you're now vice president of this division. Sam, you're now vice president of this division. They may give you that title, but they never anoint you as the leader. The leader is the one who, and by the way, you rarely get that title without first being a leader. You know, you first act. You're not going to be anointed. You're not going to be, you're told you're in charge of this. You're not, when you see a situation broken, you're not going to be asked to lead the charge. You just have to lead. You just have to take action. You have to do it. You have to look at your situation as a leader. And let me just share one situation with you. And I'll kind of be out front here. Maybe you shouldn't be an audio on a podcast that's released publicly. But as I'm looking at a situation within the university where there's some rebranding activity going on and strategic visioning going on, faculty members are being asked for their strategic view of where things are going, what should happen. And they were asked to do so in a very positive way. I think it was positive anyway. I don't think anybody thought it was negative. Hey, this is the doomsday. I think it was strategically, where do you want to go? And you're watching faculty members, highly intelligent people, communicate with very little leadership, little boldness, seeking permission. A little bit of negativity, and hey, this could be happening to us, without much authority, communicating with out of weakness, kind of all the things just opposite of, because I remember looking at their list of things they had written down and thinking, this just does not inspire me in the slightest. To think if I was in here and this is part of the team I was part of, I would just find this not interesting, not exciting. And, to get up and come to work in the morning for this, such a micro change, people want to be led. Absolutely, we all want to be led. Now, let me be clear. You're a follower as well as a leader. I'm a follower as well as a leader. This is true of everyone. We're all leading, we're all following, and sometimes I'm leading John one day, and John's leading me the next, or I'm leading John in one particular area, and John's leading me in another. We all have this leadership responsibility. We all have follower responsibilities. But look, we all want to be led. We all want to be led. We all want to be inspired. We all want energy. And you, as a leader, can provide that. And when you do that, even in the most simple ways, you brand yourself as a leader. And it doesn't take very much personal branding as a leader to suddenly find yourself actually with the title of the leader. So I hope that helps you today. That's the ending of this personal branding segment. And this is your company of one activity of marketing yourself. I hope that you found this helpful and useful. Please, provide me feedback. I've really enjoyed the feedback and got some great thoughts from some of you, mostly via email. But you know, obviously you can leave comments on the show notes at dalecallahan.com/24, or on the show notes of 22 and 23 also on the other parts from branding from first impressions and branding from actions. This is on iTunes, the podcast. You're probably listening to it either from the website or via iTunes. And you can subscribe to us. If you've enjoyed this show, you can subscribe on iTunes and even leave comments on iTunes about the show and rate the shows. And that helps other people, by the way. By the way, as I've said many times, books on Amazon, podcast, comments on blogs is a leadership activity. You're making your voice heard. So I commend you today to speak up, to act, and to be happy. to just try to be happy. So go out and go lead.